Hey, and welcome to the last episode of 2015 of Chicago Beer Pass. This week, Nick and I are doing something special. We got Jonathan Cutler from Peace Brewery in Chicago here. What did we do these last 3 weeks, Zoe? What'd you make it to?
Yeah, because, you know, you got a cork popped out, boom, it flies like fucking 10 feet. We're like, yeah, let's do it.
The legend, Mr. Pete Crowley. I love Pete Crowley, man.
How's that beer? It's what you think it is.
It'll be like the stuff you hear. You ever go to every time you go to Floyd's, all the music sounds like this. Raw, raw, raw.
Hey, and welcome to Chicago Beer Pass. I'm Brad Chmielewski.
Hey, I'm Nick White.
And this is our last episode of the new year, and we're doing something special.
We're going out with a bang, man. I'm very excited about this episode, man.
Right. Jonathan Cutler, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. We got Jonathan Cutler here, the brewmaster at Peace Brewery, man. And really on the short list of, you know, one of the best brewers of our generation in this town, man. Been brewing since 2001 at Peace.
Yep.
2006.
And I'm blushing too now.
this is a big deal, man. 2006, Brewmaster of the Year, World Beer Cup. 25 medals since he's opened the place. It's intense, man.
Right. So we're breaking format, I think, our usual, what we've been drinking and what we're going to be drinking. You know, it's New Year's, it's Christmas, there's events happening, but it's like not as many like beer fest happening. There's fun New Year's events, but that's about it. So we figured, you know, why not get seven growlers and just like, dive in?
I couldn't make up my mind. I figured once I started filling one, I'm like, just bring them all. Screw it.
Yeah, man.
It's the holidays.
We're glad you're here, man. One of the reasons we went to have you on is because I think that this is our year-end extravaganza.
Okay.
You know, and one of the biggest stories of the year is that, you know, hey, you know, Peace Brewery, once again, you know, took home a medal this year, bronze medal for Great American Beer Fest, the only brewery in the city to win this year for Taking Back the Streets, which is a double pale ale, right? So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And
thank
this
you.
Is like we said, like number 25. Does this ever get old for you? Let's start there.
No, it doesn't. It never gets old. It's always nice, but it's always very, very nerve wracking. You know, yeah. It's, when we opened up, we won a couple of medals out of the gate. So I think the owner kind of just was like, assumed that's, you know, that's what you did. You know, that's just what people do at award ceremonies is win medals. And we've been really fortunate won a couple. So, it never gets old, but I guess the stress is definitely builds.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
Yeah. It gets there is very the moment of excitement, but it's also kind of a moment of like, oh, thank God, you know,
right,
like
right.
Holy shit, okay, it was all that work and effort and stressing about, you know, like which one, and you know, did we enter the right beers this year? Did we do it? Because
did we really send them a double IPA into the Kolsch category?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, did we label everything right? It's like, and you're running around, and we always try and send them the freshest possible example of our beer. So we're sending them basically overnight or the day before. You know, so they're getting them right when they get them, and for us to do that, we don't really brew like a special batch, so we kind of have to decide, okay, we're, you know, you decide a long time before what categories you're entering and what beers you're entering, and it's like, well, then we just have to start about a month or a month and a half, and it's like, that's what we're going to brew for the next 7 months, so there's never really a special batch of that beer that goes or a special beer that goes. It's just like, well, we're going to enter the single or we're going to enter the Take Back the Streets. So we're going to start brewing it now and we're going to keep brewing it because it always seems like, oh, we're getting so close and so close and so close. And it's a Friday and we were planning on bottling next week. And it's like, oh, we got plenty of time.
Yeah.
And then it's like, we've got a barrel left and it's Friday. So we've got to put on the next batch and that'll be the one that's bottled.
Is that something unique for you guys? You're thinking a lot of breweries kind of do like one-off special things and just like, this is the beer like we planned all year to enter and now we're brewing it that one time.
I think some people do that. And then I think some people send I mean, I think everyone just tries to send the best example of what they can. We're just kind of, I don't think we're unique in that aspect, like that we want to send the best example of it. It's just a lot of times we're basically just sending what we have.
Sure,
you know, and we're not, you know, back when you used to be able to enter seven beers, we have seven serving tanks, so we just
enter each
send
one.
Send those seven, and that was what we were entering. It wasn't our tanks, our brewery isn't designed laid out where it's, you know, it's all JV tanks and everything's ready, and you've got a spare serving tank, and we've got keg room, or we got cooler space. We've got about 5x3 cooler area between our serving tanks. So we've just, like, it's like, well, time to bottle. Let's go to the tank, cook it up, send it, and obviously we're tasting. And so everything's got to be, you know, dead nuts going up to that, leading up to that event.
Now, we've been to Peace countless times, right?
I think I was just there last week on Festivus, for Festivus.
Brad was just there for Festivus. how big is the crew that you're brewing with over at Peace?
It's just myself and another guy, Kyle. Kyle Weimer is the new assistant brewer over at Peace, and he's doing a great job.
Nice. New, so it was only you beforehand, or do you have another
assistant? No, we've always had, it was myself for the first 5.5-6 years, then got an assistant. He was there for about 8 years, and then we recently got a new assistant.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, because I can't imagine, like, you guys got to go through a lot of beer.
We're pumping out, and it's on a 7-barrel system too. So most of the if we brew 1,500 barrels a year versus someone who's got a 15-barrel system, we're brewing twice as many times, obviously, to get the same amount of product out. But that was the original business plan, was we were going to do about 500 barrels a year.
Okay.
And then we did 560, 640, 750, 1,000, 1,250, you know, just kept going up from there.
I like the concept. It's like, hey, you know, you can go to Peace and try this beer, or you can find it at a festival, one of the festivals that you like entering. And that's it. Was that part of the original plan too? Like, hey, you'll get this beer here.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it was just like we're a pub, you know, a brew pub. Like we're opening as a pizza place and a brewery. So you're gonna come here if you wanna get it. And the idea was to make the best pizza we possibly can. I mean, we basically have the best products we can.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Like, pizza's good, beer's good, and it's just it's worked, it's clicked. So
nice. So we're drinking. Nick already got a second beer, but we don't want to miss any beers here.
Drinking a lot nowadays, man. I don't know what's going on.
But we started with the Kolsch here.
Yeah.
Right? Yep.
Kolsch is probably, I'm guessing, one of your top selling beers, I would guess.
Yes. It was, up until probably 2 or 3 years ago, always the number one seller because it's our lightest, most approachable beer. Mm-hmm. When we opened, there was kind of like figuring out what should we do for our kind of base beer.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'll just do a wheat ale, like a turn and burn, something you can pump out. And me and my ultimate wisdom decided to brew a Kolsch one day.
Okay.
And it turned out well, and the customers liked it. And it's like, well, hurry up and make another one. And this was back when we were only selling 750 barrels a year without the other tanks. So that kind of clicked. And I've been to Cologne about 3 times, so it was one of those things. I'm like, I'd like to make one. And then we won a medal for it, and then we won another medal for it, and then I could never stop making it.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's the golden arm.
The golden arm, yes.
Yeah, it's one of my go-to when I'm there, and like, I feel like the menu changes so quickly with like the new releases. If there's one like, oh, I've had everything, give me a golden arm and I'll think about it. Why?
And that's kind of, you're not alone in that respect. There's a lot of people. It's like, let me have a golden arm while I'm thinking about what I'm going to get.
Right, right.
And it's a lot of brewers go-to beers.
All right.
So
it's a cool beer. And then a lot of brewers who make really killer pale ales and IPAs don't really, I don't know if they don't have the patience or they don't have the interest, but either way, you don't get a whole lot of brewers that are really good at like making like a nice Kolsch and then making killer IPAs and barley wines as well.
And that's coming up. The Moose Knuckle will be coming out in probably end of February. That's usually basically the last. It started out the last beer we're gonna brew of the year is gonna be our barley wine. So we just make one a year, put two barrels of it in a barrel and put the rest on tap, and that's it.
Nice.
Now, I know you guys, I know you brewed at, I know you brewed at Sierra Nevada, and I think you got, you might have got your start at Goose, I think, right?
Yeah, well, actually, I got my start at Leinenkugel's.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there was the 10th Street plant, which is in Milwaukee.
Okay.
So I graduated from college. Well, first I should thank my dad, Dick Cutler, Private Eye, beer enthusiast. I decided in college I started homebrewing, and I was having more fun doing that than the classes I was taking. And I was on my seventh or sixth year of my undergraduate, and which is my dad's favorite joke, which I'll tell later in a minute. Yeah. Called him up, and that's when I found out about Siebel. Called up my dad, told him, "Hey, I've wasted enough of your money and our time and everything like that. I've really decided what I want to do. I think I want to drop out of school and go to Siebel and try and get a job in brewing." And my dad's like, "That's great. I'm really happy that you've, you know, found something you're passionate about. And it's taken a while, but I'm glad you're excited. But there's no way in hell you're dropping out of school.
Right.
If you want to be a ditch digger, you're going to be a ditch digger with a college degree." So
okay.
He's like, "I'll make you a deal. You hurry up and decide what you want to do and get your major and graduate, and I'll help you out with brewing school, and we'll go from there." Very, very loving and supportive father. I can't thank him enough. And my mother, Diane Cutler. I cannot thank my parents enough for that. But
because you could have said absolutely no, like, get the hell out of here.
Yeah,
no,
exactly. It's like, what the hell are you talking about? Right. But so I went to the bursar's office and said, "What can I graduate the quickest in today?" And they added it up, and they're like, "Well, you can get a sociology degree, or if you take 3 more hours, you can get a degree in psych." And I was like, "Sosh it is."
Right.
Okay. So a year later, I graduated sociology and then started taking the brewer's short course out of order, because I would have had to wait until May of the next year to take it in one chunk. Okay. So, but the registrar at the time was Chris Bird, who's worked all around Chicago, worked at Goose Island, worked at Revolution, worked down at Altec, Kentucky Brewing.
Yeah, where they do the really big bourbon ale.
Yeah.
They make a lot of it, that bourbon ale.
Yeah. So he was the registrar at the time, and said, "Well, just take the classes out of order. You can start taking them now and get a job quicker."
Now, did they do Siebel at Clybourne back then, too?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. And they also did it at Mickey Finn's, and I grew up in Libertyville. So I was already kind of hanging out there.
They did Siebel classes up in Mickey Finn's?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it was back
when. Didn't know that.
Chris Sorzi, who gives out the awards, actually was one of the first brewers at Mickey Finn's. So I was hanging out there, and then Chris left. Ryan Ashley was the assistant. He moved up. I think Ryan's working down at Four Roses Bourbon now.
Yeah.
But I was, homebrewing like a madman, living at my parents' house, bringing beers over to those guys. Whenever they got a malt order, I was unloading and stuff like that. And in that time frame, I was also driving to Leinenkugel's to work on the packaging line, just to get my foot in the industry. Huh. I mean, just to do anything I could possibly do.
Drinking all the
shanty,
hazelnut shanty. You could.
Well, probably that wasn't even that around.
No,
that time.
No, right? that was when they had opened a place in a ballpark in Arizona, which I don't think is there anymore. And their red ale started as somebody put caramel malt in a beer that wasn't supposed to have caramel malt in it, and it turned out red instead of brown, so it was like right field red or something like that.
Yeah.
But they just did kegs, and they were starting to do bottles there. But that's really where I started.
Interject while you're talking. Which one of these is the Festivus? Because everybody's had it except for me. So I just
right there.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, you're really mixing things up here. You're jumping around.
Well, we got so many. Like, I don't know if we can all just, like, you know, we should all just pick a favorite and just, you know, just try it.
Yeah, I'll crack open a single. Brad and I can have some.
All right, I'll go with the single.
All right.
So, yeah, your dad has really embraced the brewing and the beer scene. Like, he's at every festival.
Yeah,
see
no.
See him all the time.
Dick's been to more breweries, and he's been around the world more times than I have, to more breweries than I have. So, yes. He's my number one fan and a very proud father. So, and I like I said, I couldn't have done it without him. So, least I can do is to try and get him into some beer fest and stuff like
sure.
that.
Sure. So poured the single.
Single, yes.
What are we looking for here? What's like, is this kind of like a on the menu all the time if you go into Peace?
It's become more frequent. It was inspired by another beer that I tasted when I was judging at the GABF, and we couldn't it was I think the category, well, I don't know if I'm supposed to tell the category, but it was a category that's not around, or they've done it into other categories, but we it was something that I was thought was going to be a harder category to judge, that there was going to be more kind of people butting heads, because yeah. you'll have that. I mean, or not butting heads, but disagreeing, or more
okay.
Intense conversations about flavors and stuff like that, when you can have a category with spices or different, especially Belgian yeasts or French or other and stuff like that. Okay. And but it was one of those. It left our we judged it, went to another table, and we were hoping it would come back, and it came back, and it tasted even better. It was like, I mean, words like, you know, wonderful, gorgeous, you know, one of the best beers I've had. This is, you know, great. And we actually did a kind of a joke. We're like, we're gonna need a re-pour on this one, because usually you'll start out and you get down to about five beers, and you're like, okay, and you're kind of looking for flaws more.
And
than,
this is at JBF.
Yes. Right, yeah. And you're looking for more for flaws than you are for the best thing, kind of why this beer wouldn't work in a category, or why it kind of, not why it does deserve a medal, but why it doesn't, which is seems counterintuitive, but it's, you kind of have to, you know, get your put the best beers forward, and then having seven different palates at the table really helps kind of get that job done. But this was one of those instances where it was just like, no, this is the best beer I've had today. This might be one of the best beers I've had this week. And so I set out to try and kind of make something similar to that. Just a really light Belgian ale. There's no spices in it. It's really a super simple malt bill, one hop. And it's just this really unique yeast that kind of ferments out really dry, but the beer doesn't taste very dry. It's not cloyingly sweet like you'll get with some Belgians.
Right, okay.
And it finishes with kind of like a little tang, but it's not sour by any means, but it's almost like a slight tart
kind of thing. Your brain thinks sour for like a minute, and you're like, but no, that wasn't sour. That was just the Belgian yeast characteristic.
Yeah. It's just a little kind of like almost like a tart finish, and it finishes dry, but not drying your mouth, and you still get that Belgian character. So it was just one of those beers that kind of, I really liked an example of it, and then I was like, well, how am I going to make something even close to what I tasted? And then,
okay. Did you ever find out what that beer was, or
trial and error? But I don't know if I'm supposed to tell because the judges, right.
Some things remain unknown. Did you now how much did you and your partners talk about like the type of beers you would make back when Peace started?
That's one of the kind of the nice things about when I started working there. There really wasn't any expectations other than I was going to make good beer. And I mean, common sense, I wasn't gonna, you know, put four stouts on tap or anything like that. We had seven serving tanks, so I was going to make seven beers. So I was like, well, I'm going to make something light. I'm going to make something hoppy. I'm going to make something dark, or, you know, a stout porter or dark lager or something like that. And then kind of fill in the spaces in between there with what I can, and seasonals, and then bring those in. So there wasn't really any like, you have to brew this, or we have names, or we do this. So I kind of really had free reign. I just kind of walked in and was like, do it, you know. Like, here you go. Here's a system. Start making some beer.
This is how much cash we got for this. Go do it.
Yeah. So, that's, and cool. You know, obviously, cash is a concern when you're, you know, starting a business. But I just, you know, basically, and I mean, I think most of the really, really good brewers I know do kind of the same thing. It's, you go to, you just taste a lot of beers.
Yeah.
And you'll, no matter where you go and no matter where you're at, there's always someone making something that you're like, wow, that, you know, that stuck out in my head. You know, there's some pub where
Yeah.
You know, it's like, this beer's good. Like, all the beers are good, but like, wow, this Pilsner was really great. Or this, all the beers are good, but this pale ale, it's like, what, there's something different about that. Like, what are you doing? And you try and not rip off stuff from people, but it's basically just kind of sharing of information. And that's kind of what's really cool about this industry too, is most people are, you know, open books. It's like, hey, you know, it's like, what are you doing with this? And it's like, yeah. Oh, I'm using this Maris Otter this Maris Otter malt from here, or I'm trying out this new, you know, caramel malt, or I'm trying out this, and kind of the free exchange of ideas really.
Especially if you're not competing, like you're just, you guys are a brew pub. If they're a brew pub in Seattle, it's like, we're never going to be butting heads at all. So like, what are you doing here? Yeah. I'll let you know.
and when we started out too, it was basically, I mean, there was Goose Island, there was Rock Bottom, and then it was us. You know, there was the brew pubs out in the suburbs, and I've knew some guys out there, but it was just like, yeah, just go to the GABF, taste some beers. You're like, oh, that tastes really good. Or go to the Map Room or the Hop Leaf at the time, because that's, I mean, you figure 14 years ago, the beer landscape in Chicago was barren.
Yeah.
You know, there really wasn't a whole lot going on. So
it's wild how fast. You know, when people from other cities ask me why in the last 4 years, I'm like, well, I don't know. We got a new mayor. But I don't know, like, if that's a direct correlation. But in the last 4 years, there's been a ridiculous amount of breweries in this town.
Well, I think it was, I don't – Chicago used to be a really, really kind of, I guess, distributor-wise, a much tougher town to get in, because there was – people in town doing like, hey, you buy one keg, we'll give you four,
right?
Kind of things.
That's Chicago ways.
Yeah, exactly. One hand washes you, and that was when King Richard.
And
was
then
running.
Go vote three times when you're done.
Yeah.
With that.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, King Richard's tearing up Meg's Field, you know, in the middle of the night and stuff like that, and selling the parking meters. But it was almost like a bell went off where people were like, Chicago is one of the third largest cities in the country, and there's no one shipping beer there.
And they love to drink.
Yeah, exactly. there's a thirsty community there. So,
So you were talking about Peace starting, and you brought this beer that Matt Brendelson came out and helped brew, right?
Yes.
And he originally helped like design the brew system, or helped what was his role?
He met Bill, the managing, like the owner, the managing partner. He met him playing Ultimate, and kind of talked to him.
Ultimate Frisbee.
All right, cool.
Yeah. I'd have it.
Ultimate Fighting.
I just thought about vodka when I heard Ultimate. I'm like,
I didn't know what it was either. I knew Frolf, you know, like Frisbee golfing.
Yeah, I know about frothing, yeah.
Because it's a much lazier man's sport. But they'd met doing that. I was working at Goose Island. Matt was possibly going to be the brewer at Peace before it opened up.
Yeah.
So John Mallett was involved in some of the design. I think Matt was involved in kind of consulting Bill find the system, which were easier to come by in those days.
Yeah.
And we got literally the cheapest system that ABT, Jim Krejci, a lot of people know him around town.
Yeah, so he did Haymarket.
Yeah, literally the cheapest system he's ever sold.
No kidding.
Yeah, yeah. And we've been brewing on it for 14 years. So, So Matt was new Bill, friend of his, and I was working at Goose Island when he was head brewer before he left, and we were friends. And then I left he left Goose about a year earlier.
This is the pub. This is Clybourne.
No, this is the production plant.
Oh, okay. Right,
cool. So we were a really tight-knit crew. There was, you know, three cellarmen, three brewers, six people total, Matt and a microbiologist. And then there was the office who kind of told us what to do. And then we just, you know, we're just crushing beers through that system as fast as we could and making the best beers we possibly could as a crew. And a lot, I mean, Findament came out of that. Josh Deeth came out of that. Gary Nichols, who was at Bell's, who's now over at Surly, came out of that. Matt Robbins, who went to work with Finn at Southern Tier, came out of that. And Matt Brendelson and myself.
I
so
like
it was,
Southern Tier.
Well, it was a lot of ideas. And if you didn't know the answer to a question, or if you came in with a question and someone of those seven people didn't know it, you'd find it out. Someone was going to figure out by the end of the week. So it's like, oh, well, I want to know that now. So we'll, there was a lot of ideas flowing around, and it was a really, really interesting environment to work in. And then Matt left. I tried to run the packaging line for the 11 of some of the worst months of my life. You have to have some mechanical ability to be a brewer, but I don't inherently know how to time a drop caser.
Right.
So I took a 480, 440, 480 volt shock, knocked a wrench out of my hand.
Okay.
Because there's machines that'll, even after you're unplugged and shut them off, they'll hold the electricity. So it was a kind of a weird thing there. So I wound up leaving to go, and I worked at Sierra Nevada for almost a year.
You left after you broke the
I shocked myself. I'm out. I did not sign up for that.
It was
fuck shit up and leave.
They had a guy who worked at, Canfields who had bought all this equipment, and then he left, and they kind of left people who, you know, didn't really. Basically, everyone was just kind of doing the best they could at that point. You know, Goose was still a smaller company. They were less than 50,000 barrels a year. So it was there was a lot of used equipment, a lot of piecemeal stuff together. And, it was hard, but opportunity came up. I left there. I went out to Sierra Nevada for a while, which is like, you know, brewer's paradise. Unbelievable.
West Coast, Chico.
Yeah, and there's beautiful parts of California. Chico is not necessarily one of them. It's really, really hot. It's in the Sacramento Valley. You're about 3 hours from mountains, 3 hours from the coast. But the brewery was just, you know, this thing of wonder, like awe-inspiring.
And I'm just interjecting. There's this guy we were talking to from Magnolia Brewing in San Francisco, and he was saying, like, hey, you know, you've either got, you know, UC Davis not too far from Chico, and then Siebel, and that's it. If you're talking about going to, like, brewing universities,
yeah,
like, those are the only two around.
Yeah, and when I was I should back up a little bit. When I was at a school, one of the things I was thinking of doing, my grandfather was a psychologist and psychiatrist and a surgeon, had two medical degrees. My aunt's a nurse. My dad sold hospital equipment as a biology major, and so I come from kind of a medical background. So I was taking organic chemistry, biology, things kind of leading towards not being a doctor, but maybe working in a medical field.
Yeah.
And then, so I have a little bit of biology background. Organic chemistry was definitely the toughest class I ever took. I have a little bit of that background, and science, and I forget what we were talking about for a second.
Yeah, so you went out to Cali, listened to a lot of Grateful Dead.
Siebel was – UC Davis wasn't really as well known in 97 when I graduated from college. Okay. So Siebel was – it made much more sense. Chicago, I'm from Chicago, recovering Catholic from the suburbs, and right.
So when the opportunity came up for Peace or this new brew pub that was happening?
Yeah, I was still talking with Matt. He had come up to visit me. We'd met in San Francisco and seen a couple shows, concerts together. We both are fans of music. And he said, yeah, there's this brew pub opening in Chicago. I'm like, well, you know you're giving me the, like, I'm getting the job, right? You know, it was basically like,
right. It's like, this needs to happen.
Yeah, this is happening. I'm going. He's like, well, they're talking to somebody else. I was like, yeah, I don't care. I'm going back to Chicago. You know? So I'm like, you know, I'm the guy for the job. So, and he's like, yeah. He's like, but you're overqualified. You know, it's like, do you want to go back to doing this?
Yeah, I guess when you talk about, like, you know, at the time, 500-600 barrels a year at Peace, and then, like, Sierra Nevada, one of the grandfathers.
When you were at Goose and Sierra Nevada.
And then Goose and Goose and Sierra Nevada. Like, that's,
brew pub, yeah.
Yeah, you're taking, yeah, it's a totally different environment.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It was like, Sierra's just, again, like, I cannot say enough good things about that company. Just, they treat their employees so well. It was a wonderful experience. I hated to have to cut it short, but I was working with people who were doing the same thing that I was doing that day for the last 14 years.
And then you probably weren't. Were you making your own recipes out there, like you got to do here?
No. I mean, it's a massive plant, so you're a cog in a wheel kind of thing. You're still, I mean, your attention to detail. You're working with really smart people.
Yeah,
and you're learning a lot of really interesting, drinking great beer. But Sierra then, even then, wasn't doing a whole lot of experimentation. There was pale porter stout, and then they were getting into some lagers. They brewed their first Weiss beer when I was out there, and it was at that point when I was 27, and it just didn't. There wasn't a lot of room for upward movement. There was no possibility that they were going to open a place on the other side of the country.
And, yeah.
in the Carolinas, there was the guy who was in charge of filtration grew up in Chico and had been working there since they opened. And
okay.
So there was people, it was kind of like, well, I could stay here and I could work at this unbelievable brewery and get fatter than I am right now and, you know, just chill out, or I could take a chance and come back and try and make a name for myself.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So it was like, well, if I'm ever going to do it, you know, let's roll the dice and do it now. And so I came back to Chicago. And
you get to see, like, I think a lot of people like to, they like the big companies where it's like, I just do my job and I go home. Or right. You work at the smaller place where, like, I take out the trash and, like, I do the stuff that no one wants to do, but we're building this thing that's great and people like to come here. Or, you know, I just get my paycheck and take vacation. No, like,
and
everyone.
There's days that I go back and forth on.
Yeah.
Because that's the other thing. Like, when you're working at a production place, you've got a shift, and if the filter pump breaks, you're going to work on it until the next guy or the next two guys show up, and then you're handing it off and you're going home. If I get in the middle of a brew and something breaks, I'm there, you know, until I get some help or until we decide that we've exhausted all our mechanical knowledge and the person that we need to call can't make it out there till tomorrow. And you know, so there's benefits to working at both places.
Sure.
What did we just crack open here, Brad?
So this is the beer that Matt came and you guys collaboration.
Yeah.
Collaboration
this
beer.
Is the Memories beer.
Memories of Now. Yeah,
Memories of Now.
It's supposed to sound like a bad jazz album.
What was your initial, we were talking about this in the pre-show a little bit. What was your initial response when you found out that, hey, Goose, you know, and John Hall, they were 15% sold at the time. And then they just said, "Hey, we're selling it all to the guys at AB. We're gonna get out of this, and we're gonna sell completely." What was your initial response when you heard that?
I mean, I wasn't really surprised.
Yeah.
When I was there, you know, like I don't know if anybody remembers Hooch.
Hooch.
Yeah.
I don't remember Hooch.
It was basically like Alco-Pop. It was like Mike's Hard Lemonade before anything. Okay. So. And they were doing contract brews for other people, and I mean John opened the pub in '88, and then I can't remember the exact, a couple years later opened the plant.
Yeah,
I mean they were there for a long time, you know. So I think when the opportunity came up, it was a lot of money. You're seeing breweries getting sold for ridiculous amounts of money these days. So
right.
He might be kicking himself.
Ballast Point was $1 billion transaction.
Yeah, and they started out as a homebrew shop, right?
It's wild, man.
Or
yeah.
One Instagram. That's how much Instagram got, too.
They got $1 billion?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm guessing Goose would go for at least, well, back then it was like 38 mil or whatever, but I'm guessing at least 100 mil if it sold today.
Yeah.
I would think. Like, but yeah, because some of their distribution rights were sold, and so they were kind of in bed with AB at that point. So yeah. it wasn't a huge surprise, you know. They're still making good beer there, but it's kind of funny. Like 312 is not made in Chicago anymore.
Isn't that wild? Yeah. Mixed feelings.
Yeah. So the hopper, the hops just filled up our glass here in the room, like it's like kind of nuts.
This, for this beer, yeah.
Yeah. So the idea, and like I've you know joked with Nick about this was there's session IPAs kind of the craze right now, low alcohol, lots of hops. This is not a session IPA. That's why kind of the Memories of Now, like kind of harkens back to a day when people made extra pale ales.
Yeah.
No one remembers that anymore.
Right, right, yeah.
when Three Floyds made an extra pale ale and a lot of other breweries made extra pale ales.
Because some of these, and you know, this is a good topic because like, because you use these phrases sometimes too. So like we're talking extra pale ale, and then we've had a beer on from like Revolution, which was like a double pale ale. And then obviously there's the IPA. Like, are these synonyms, or what in your view as a brewmaster,
yeah,
like what
brewer are, brewer as master a bre- of
as,
nothing
as a brewer, you know, well, you know what, but no, how, what do you, how do you feel about a double pale versus an IPA, for example?
Well, there's arguments I guess on both sides, but yeah, it's weird. Even when you're judging, you'll see there's American pale ale, there's American strong pale ale, there's American IPA, and then there's American double IPA, and all those categories, really, they overlap.
Yeah. Sure, yeah.
Because I've judged one of those categories before, and you're going to see beers that some people are going to call
too hoppy,
something different. Yeah, yeah, they could be. Some people's American American pale ales are, they're IPAs. They're, you know, 6-7%, and they're hopped crazy, yeah, but that's their pale ale. And you know, we as Americans make everything bigger and, you know, sure, stronger. Yeah. So the hops have gone crazy. But that's why I was like, I'm gonna make an extra pale ale. I'm going back. So there's still some malt character in here, and it's not a screecher. It's not 70 BUs, 4.5%. It's 5%, about 35 BUs, yeah. And then with some aroma, so you get some hop flavor, yeah, and aroma without. But it's not a bomb. You know, it's not you know, like somebody just tore open a bag of citrus in here or something like that, or
something our friends across the pond could appreciate. Like, a little bit more balanced.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of been since day one has really kind of been one of the things that I try and do is, I want to brew beers to style, but I also want to brew beers that I want to drink. So we've won a medal in American Pale Ale, American Strong Ale, double IPA. So we've won in all the hoppy categories. I haven't won a medal in IPA ever because I had a beer that I actually got notes back where this should be in the strong pale ale category. So I ended up in that. And then they're like, this should be an IPA.
Oh.
And or vice versa, actually. And I was like, all right, I'll try it one more time. And I entered in strong pale ale, and that was dysfunctional. And I wound up winning the gold that year. So okay. I was like, well, those were useful notes. That was great. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Nice.
But yeah, you'll see where those categories overlap. And really a lot of people are using a lot of hops these days, and I always try and make beers that at least have some malt to balance it out. Because I've had beers that are, I mean, medal winning beers, you know, because they're true to style. They're a double IPA, you know, to the letter. But it's just like, holy cow! Like, I gotta drink a glass of water and brush my teeth after that. Like,
right?
That was a lot of hops.
Like, it just hangs out in your mouth, in your face,
in
your life.
Well, we were drinking the hop-centric beforehand. Yeah.
There's a time and a place for those. There's a demand for those, and those beers are there. And we do once in a while, we'll make a beer that's just obnoxiously hoppy, you know. Yeah. But I'm like, all right, well, let's put something in to back it up a little bit. You know, it's like even the dries a bone, hoppy beer, I still try and have some balance to them, because I think there should be, you know, I guess, you know, I'm a Libra. There's balance in life.
I hear that.
That was a total joke. Well, I do not believe in astrology at all.
Well, I was always a fan of Camel Toe. And that
Camel Toe is really
nice.
Hasn't
been on in a while, and when it's on, it's gone really fast.
Yeah, and that'll be coming back. Okay. But what we've got now is Take Back the Street. So that's the place of our double IPA. That's our double pale ale, which was kind of created out of necessity. We needed to, we were making a new beer, and one of the beers that was getting sent, I didn't feel was up to snuff.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, that's, and then it was trying to define a beer that you've made. Sometimes it's harder, you know. It's like the single, for instance, or Flatiron Stout or some of the other beers I made. It's like, but Flatiron Stout's a perfect example. I love that beer, but it's been, we've been making it for years. I think it's a really nice session stout, but for it to be a session beer, it has to be a smaller version of an existing style. Well, it's not really a small oatmeal stout because it's kind of almost bleeding into that category. It's not a foreign stout. It's not this. It's not that. So that's when you come to the, or some brewers, or you as a brewer might come to a, you're like, well, should I make, turn this into an oatmeal stout, or should I make it something else? And it's like, well, no, that's a really good beer on its own. I'm just going to leave it and it just won't get entered. You know, it's kind of, kind of one of those beers.
What's it like brewing with a guy like Matt Brendelson versus like a guy like Nick Floyd, for example, right? Like, because you've seen it all. You know, it was the cool part about having you here.
Yeah, both easy. Nick's quiet, so, and I've been friends with him for years, and we've got a similar sense of humor, so it's no problem. And Matt's little. I can knock him down. No, and Matt's really easygoing, too, so it's, it's really a... Most of the people we've done collaborations with, or actually I shouldn't say most, all the people we've done collaborations with, are it's always fun, you know, like going up to Half Acre and hanging out with Matt and Gabriel, both, you know, just really easygoing guys. Pete and I have been joking about a collaboration for a while. He came up with a great name.
Crowley?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but yeah, Three Floyds, I've known those guys for years, and I mean...
The Ham on Rye, that's good.
Yeah, and Marketing Ploy, you know.
Marketing Ploy, yeah.
Yeah, Marketing Ploy is nice. Yeah. I like...
It's a two, yeah.
Dark and Curvy. When I go to Peace, Dark and Curvy is the one that I find myself gravitating towards for some reason.
That's coming up after the Hef. We do have some Hef advice in here. it's funny because that beer was kind of born out of... And a good friend of mine, when I was making Hefeweizen, or when I was making my first batch of Hefeweizen, he's like, once you start making it, you're not going to be able to stop. He's like,
the Hefs?
Yeah, he's like, you won't be able to stop. And I was just like, you know, kind of laughed it off a little bit. And he's like, no, he's like, I'm serious. He's like, you start making it, he's like, they're going to just want it all the time. And then we won a medal for it. And he's like, oh, shit, okay, well, can I swear on here?
Do whatever we want.
All right, good. Because I've been holding back. I swear like a sailor. And I'm trying not to.
All good.
But it was like, all right, we won a medal. All right, so we have to keep making it. So we made some more. And then we won another medal. And this sounds like, oh, shit. Like, we won a medal. Like, I'm bummed out. It was like, oh, great. But it's like, oh, we have to keep making it. And the pub system that I'm working on wasn't really designed to make vice beers. You know, when you need to do a step mash or temperature changes, I've got a 7-barrel system with a 5-barrel mash tun. It's it's really undersized. The system designed to make basically 10 to 14, maybe 15 Play-Doh English style beers. That's what it was. You know, it's a mono block system. So, but you know, the old adage, like a good mechanic doesn't blame his tools. So you just kind of trick your system into doing what you want it to do, figure out a way and play around with it. And it's like, that's not quite what I want. So I'm going to back off on this and push this and change that.
When you go to something like CBC and they're like, you're doing that on that system, are they like amazed and like just...
Or are they like, what the fuck are you doing?
That's...
What's wrong with you?
Yeah, are you nuts? That was one of the nicer compliments I got when Matt's right-hand man out at Firestone, Dustin, came walking back in the brewery, and he's like, and it, you know, we were, this wasn't very long ago, it's probably like maybe 4 or 5 years ago, and he's like, you're making these beers on this? He's like, are you fucking kidding me?
Right.
He's like, dude, he's like, I have so much more respect for you. And I'm not trying to toot my own horn. But I was like, that was one of the nicest things that anyone ever said. I was like, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
It's like, this is your pilot brew system, right? That's something else somewhere else.
So it was really, that was really like, kind of like a sweet, like nice thing to say, you know, so. You figure out your system and you figure out what it can do, and then you figure out how to like, hey, look that way while I do this and trick it and doing what you need it to do.
Yeah. So speaking of Hefeweizens, You in 2005 at GABF, the Top Heavy, which is a half, took gold. And then the next year, 2006, I think, was like the coming out party, right? Like, you won five medals in 2006, right, between like World Beer Cup and GABF. Warrior Nail, Hefeweizen, The Fornicator. What is Fornicator?
That's our Maybach. Okay. It's kind of like a Doppelbach. So I went with the ATOR kind of inside joke kind of thing.
Yeah.
There was many other ruder names that you come up with ATOR that end that way, but fornicator is a biblical term, so we're just okay. We're gonna do that. But it actually upset a couple of priests who frequent peace. They're like, that's you know, not good. And I was like, well, it's a biblical term. Like, it's a, you know,
it's,
like,
it's in the book,
yeah,
sir.
I'm not swearing. I'm not doing it. Yeah. So it's, you know, there. And again, nothing. We're never. I'm not a misogynist. It's not, no. It's all tongue in cheek. You know, they're either like jokes about, you know.
And we're not suggesting that you are. Okay. unless it's something you want to tell.
No. My girlfriend might. No, I'm kidding. No, but it's all, you know, it's all tongue in cheek. It's all just, you know, for fun. And it's either a reference, you know, like some innuendo or a rock and some music thing or, and most of it's not even inside jokes, just stupid jokes, you know, and just because you're like, you're sitting there like, after a while you're like, what the hell can we name this? What do you want to call this? So it's just like, that's what we made.
Yeah. Okay. And then also that year, 2006, Warrior Ale. And then that's when you took Small Brew Pub and Brewmaster at World Beer Cup.
Yeah, that was that was a real surprising year. That I was kind of blown away by that.
Where was this is before my time actually. I think I came online when like
what was that 2016?
2006.
Should
we try the half while we're talking?
Oh yeah,
let's do it. Yeah, let's do it.
Go ahead. You guys, I still got to finish this.
So I know that. All right. So for those who don't know, GABF Great American Beer Fest is every year, maybe 33 years or so running in Denver every year.
And the Beer Cup is every other year.
Every other year, and then it rotates cities.
Yes.
Like
it's wherever the craft brew conference is that year.
So where do you remember 2006 when you won like shit the biggest
award
they got?
Yeah.
Seattle.
Man, 10 years ago, almost 10 years ago now.
Yeah. So what was that like, man? What do you remember about that? That conference, that festival, that Seattle run?
Well, I remember we, you know, got into town. Seattle's a lot of fun. Went to Elysian, No Dick, Cantwell, and hanging around in Seattle, having fun. We decided, a friend of mine and I decided we were going to go up to Vancouver for a day before the awards ceremony. Yeah. So we drove up to Vancouver, had some of the best sushi in my life. Had some pretty good beers. Yeah, and had a couple really good beers. And
Canada beer scene. Yeah,
yeah, just kind of hung out. Well, and you know, yeah, back then it wasn't
10 years ago.
Yeah, it wasn't as a lot of things were different. But but yeah, we were, and then we came. I remember coming into the awards ceremony, and they have you send extra bottles, and that's when you walk into the awards ceremony dinner. There's just buckets and buckets or trays, I should say, like dish trays full of bottles of beer, and you don't want to find your beer because that means it made it through a couple rounds and or either that or someone has taken your beer and is enjoying it or it's gotten judged a couple times and made it through a couple rounds. And I remember like getting one of my beers and being like, this tastes awful, I'm not gonna win anything. And
you're like, who made this?
Yeah. And then I remember hearing a comment, and it was after the fact. Someone told me, a gentleman who wrote a book and another gentleman who was a kind of a higher up with a Brewers Association, they were sitting at a table together, and they called off the Kolsch, and I didn't win anything for Kolsch that year. And like, oh, Jonathan's going to be bummed out. And someone else who knew was like, they're like, no, I don't think he's going to be upset. And I was sitting at a table up front. Matt had brought me up. And Michael Jackson was still alive at that point. So it was myself, Michael Jackson, Garrett Oliver, John Mallett, Jen Talley. It's kind of this heavy hitter table. And they were saving a seat for me.
Yeah.
And they were joking because I was running a little bit late coming back from Vancouver. And they're like, Michael Jackson came down and took my seat, and they're like,
"This is the ceremony."
Yeah, okay. they're like, "Are we gonna? Do we have to tell Michael Jackson the colors and to take his seat?" And they were joking. They're like, "He's gonna tell him like to move," you know. And I'm like, "You guys better save a seat for me," you know. So, but they did. They appropriated a seat from another table. And I remember when the award went off for gold for the Hefeweizen, which was the largest category in 2006. Oh,
back in 2006, the Hef was the largest category at the World Cup. That's wild, man.
And I got hissed at by some people wearing very, very expensive lederhosen. There was a table of nice German gentlemen and ladies behind me. They were just like, you know, not booing, but I guess that's, you know, kind of an appropriate kind of like disappointing, you know. I was like, hell, this is great, you know. And then I sat down and they finished reading them off, and I'm like, all right, well, let's go. Let's go get some cocktails or something. We won some awards. Let's get out of here. And I can't remember who it was, but they're like, well, no, we should hang out and see who wins Brewer of the Year. I'm like, well, I don't have a chance at this. And then it happened.
Like, and then, no, sit down.
And then Matt also won that year as well. So it was really fun. And then we wound up running into Vinny Chiluruzzo. I can never pronounce his
name. Is this the Russian River?
Yeah.
Right.
Who also won that year for, I think, I won Small Brew Pub, he won Large Brew Pub, and then Matt won Medium Sized Brew Pub. So we ran into him at.
So you guys were like the kings.
Yeah, well, it was just, I'm like, we should get a picture.
You're like, bring us some hookers to kill at once.
No. But I'm like, we should get a picture or something. But yeah, it was. And then we went back to the room and raided the mini bar and. After we had closed every bar that we could find. And
so back in 2006. So like now, I mean, the Craft Brewers Conference would be like at, you know, at like, not a stadium, but like, oh, for example, like.
Well, you went to Portland.
I went to Portland, and you know, where the Portland Trailblazers play now, where they used to play, which is across the street from this current stadium, that's where the opening ceremony was, you know, at a stadium. But back then, would it have been like at, like, how big of a space would it have been in?
It's still pretty. I mean, they're pretty big venues. Yeah.
So it's not like in the hotel, like lobby or nothing.
It's in like the largest hotel, like the largest hotel in town. Their largest ballroom.
So it's a ballroom status.
A pretty big room. And in Chicago, you know, it was at the Hyatt's biggest room when we had it here.
Yeah, it was like 2010. You had something to do with
that. Yeah, it was the first time.
Yeah. And that's when everyone shares everything. And I made the mistake of telling Matt how I made my Hefeweizen. And
did he win that year?
Yeah, I won a bronze. I was like, yes, got up there. We there's a group of us who joke about like a shameful bronze. You know, like it's like, yeah, you got. You won a medal, but it was a bronze, which is ridiculous. I mean, it's like you're so thrilled to just get in.
Yeah, all the people that enter.
So I'm up on stage, and Matt's taking my picture, and then they read Firestone Walker, gold, Hefeweizen.
Oh, yeah?
I was like, fuck you, pointing at him. And Chris Sorzy looked over at me. I'm like, you know, and everyone knows we're friends. I was like, sorry. It was just their natural reaction. And I'm like, you little jerk, you know.
That's funny. It reminds me of my first JBF when I saw Brad's. For those who don't have the video, Brad's got on the Temperance hat, and then they won for English Style IPA. Temperance did like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And then you know Goose Island is sitting in like the I'm in the third row. Goose Island's in the fourth row. So and then there's this line building up, and then like Claudia's in the line, and she's looking. She used to work at Goose. She's looking at Goose, and she was like, "Yeah." It was kind of funny. So speaking of awards, man.
Yeah, everyone was stoked for Claudia that year.
That was
great.
Really cool. Yeah, you know, because like that was like maybe their first year in existence.
Yeah,
And then she's a Brewster. She's the only female brewmaster in Chicago.
Yeah,
and then her
Evanston.
Evanston. Evanston. Yeah, and then but she wins a silver medal first time out.
Yeah, and she's great, and she's making just really really great beer. I was super stoked for her. That's the thing. I'm the guy at the awards ceremony being like, congrats, like texting everyone else. And then, like, you win something, you're like, oh, shit. And they're like,
yeah. I got to put my pants on. I got to go out here and get this award. So, do you know? This is just about awards. Do you? Because you know, do you know Grant C. Johnston? He used to brew at Argus, way on the south side, like 120. In Pullman, like 113th and like, you know, Cottage Grove or something like that.
You know, I recognize the name. Yeah. I'm terrible with names and faces sometimes.
No, that's fine. He was the brewmaster at Argus, and he didn't win any awards at Argus, but before he worked at like Marin in California, Black Diamond in California, and he's got 17 career GABF medals. And I was just like, man, like when we're talking about, you know, we're having Jonathan on, we're like, well, who else comes close to what Jonathan's doing? And I'm looking at him like, 17 is the closest number I found. So I was just wondering if, like, you know, all the medal winners just kind of hang out at, like, Bangers and Lace. You know what I mean? Like,
you wear all your medals. Like...
Right, you know, they're popping bottles. They got cigars. You know what I mean? Like, I just wanted to know.
Speaking of medals, I'm gonna have some Take Back the Streets.
Let's do that. Take Back the Streets. And then the beer we're having now is the Top Heavy Hef. 2005, 2007, 2009, 2010, four-time medal winner. That fucking beer, man. I kind of get excited about this shit. This is cool.
No, and that's it. It was really, I mean, winning it once was exciting. Winning a second time, then winning at the World Beer Cup, especially when, again, like you get kind of nice things said, and I mean, accolades are great, and it's your peers saying, like, yes, you're doing a good job. But, I mean, obviously that's not why we're all doing it.
Right.
But it's nice. It's like, it's fun. It's obviously it's fun to win, you know, a medal. But I remember Michael Planck Brewery in Germany, who has won Maibach and Hefeweizen and Weizenbach medals consistently throughout the GABF, and he actually won in 2006, I think, Small Brewery of the Year.
Okay.
When we won Small Brew Pub of the Year for Hefeweizen, and he came to a piece, and he's friends with a friend of mine, they've become friends kind of through my friend Robert, who is the chef over at Langanitas. He used to work at Wrigley. His wife's German, and they have gone over to visit Planck and hung out with him. And they're like, you know, it's like Jonathan's a friend of mine. He's like, you know Jonathan? He makes good Weiss beer. And I was like,
oh, nice.
Wow, that's sweet. And then he came to Chicago, and we went to a bunch of different breweries, and he's just like, this is good. He's like, this is a good Weiss beer. And I'm just like humbled. You know? Right. Like, oh my God. I'm like, this guy's like fourth generation brewmaster. I'm like, oh, I'm like, no, I'm like, it's pretty good. It's okay. You know, like, you know, so.
No, it's a great beer. And it's funny that Peace, it's in Chicago. I feel like you get a very mixed group of people that are like, there are beer people, like beer nerds that go there because there are great beers. And you just have people that love pizza and drinking and go there. I feel like, do you have a lot of people that go there and order this beer because of the glass it comes in? Like, is that
that was the other thing. Like I remember finding that glass, and it's a big glass.
Yeah, it's a tall
splinter.
It's a 22 ounce glass.
Oh wow! I didn't realize it was that big.
I feel I've been there, and people are like, "What's that beer? I want that."
But I you know, you're going through like Libby catalogs trying to find glasses and stuff that'll stack or whatever, and I remember coming across that glass, and I was like, God, that's such a sexy glass. You know, I'm like, we could be serving it in a much smaller glass. Right. But I'm like, oh, that looks so good. And if you pour it right, you know, it, like, that's what I want it to look like. You know,
especially in a space like this open floor plan like Peace has. And, you see that glass. You can see it from clear across the room.
No, when you see somebody drinking, like, what is that? That guy has a way bigger beer than me.
So the Hefe, like I said, I couldn't stop brewing it. And I don't know if this one might be like the big reveal or whatever, but the dark and curvy, the Dunkelweiss, it was well, I don't want to say this behind because it wasn't 100%, but it was almost brewed out of you know what, I'm so tired of making Weiss. I'm gonna make a Dunkelweiss, and we'll save money on lemon. And it's like, see if the customer's like that. You know, it's just like, here's a dark Weiss. You know, it's like, just give me a break. Like, in the nicest possible way, but you know, not a I don't want you to drink my beer, but it's just like, okay, you love this vice and I can't stop drinking it, and I had a long head of hair before I started brewing it. Yeah. I'm kidding. But I'm like, all right, we'll make a Dunkelweiss and see what happens. And then we won a medal for that, and the customers didn't skip a beat. We just are saving money on lemons. So now the Dark and Curvy is people look forward to that.
They
so.
Like that. Does that
that's my
get
favorite
more
one
sales I, than the Top Heavy now, or is it kind of?
No, that's the thing. It's like when we first put it on, people didn't know what to make of it. They're like, what, you know, what's going? Where's the half?
Yeah.
Where's the Top Heavy? And I was just like, well, it's like the Top Heavy. It's just a darker version of it. And it took people a couple months, and they were just like, oh, yeah, we really dig this. And then we won a medal, and I was just like, well, we need to brew a couple more batches of it. And then it was spring and time to enter some beers again at the JBF. So we entered the Hef, and we're like, well, the people like the Dunkel will enter it. Okay. And then we won another medal for that. And then now it's basically half the year is Hefe and half the year is Dunkel. Okay. And I tried it again because I was just like, I'm sick of making Dunkel and Hefe. I'm like, I'll make a double Dunkelweiss and see what people do. And I've made that a couple of years, but we haven't made it for a little bit. But
what's that one called?
Double D Weiss.
Okay. I don't know if I had that one. Maybe I haven't been there when it's been on.
We haven't brewed it for a little bit just because, like I said, people took, like, they took to the Dunkelweiss like ducks to water. And really, there's surprisingly not a lot of breweries making a Dunkelweiss.
Yeah.
And when it's done really well, it's such an enjoyable beer. And the Double D was kind of spawned from a late night at the Map Room where I was like, well, I'm making Dunkelweiss, and Aventinus, like, they had just gotten like a fresh shipment in, and I was just like, oh man, I'm like, this is really good. Yeah. Like, this is hitting right now. Because I'll be honest, I am not the biggest Weiss beer drinker in the world.
Okay.
Well, they're heavy. I mean, they're heavy beers. You'll be full.
That's the thing.
They're filling. They're very filling beers.
And that's the thing. Like, a lot of people don't know. I mean, it's a German Hefeweiss or Dunkelweiss. It's a malty beer.
Yeah.
You know, and not just a Dunkel, but a Hef. It should have a malt sweetness to it. And a lot of American brewers, it's just Pilsner malt and wheat, and there's no malt character to it, and very little of that banana and bubblegum. It's phenolic and a little bit of wheat, and that's it.
It's kind of flat.
And very dry, but it should be kind of a sweet, all kinds of, you know, bubblegum.
Warming and inviting,
Yeah, all kinds of things going on.
So, yeah, Hefeweizen, three-time winner, or five-time winner, actually.
Six times.
Yeah. So they love the Dunkel. So I talked about the beer crowd. Like, what's that? Have you been there late at night when the crowd's drinking beer and just like asking for Bud Lights and things?
We've never had Bud Light. We have Miller Lite. It's not on any menu, and we charge $5 a bottle for it.
There you go.
Okay.
But people drink it. There are people who still want that, and you know,
because you guys are not far from the Six Corners where it gets crazy. It gets a little weird over there.
Yeah, yeah. No, that neighborhood has exploded. Yeah, so it's definitely very different from when we first opened. We've got 10 guest taps too, which we kind of fill in with beers that are local or national or friends of ours or just something that you're like, oh, this is a cool beer I've tried somewhere else or someone else tried, or hey, can you guys get this? You know, a member of staff, bartender, or something like that. So,
how many of these beers are like scale? Do any of these beers scale up from like your homebrew days? Chicago's got like this big homebrew culture, underground beer culture that they have nowadays. Like,
nothing really comes from my home. I mean, our homebrew recipes were kind of much looser, and it was basically like a friend of mine, Jimbo. We got these 100 liter, which translates to about 26 gallons. So we were making about a keg at a time, and we were turning them in about, I don't know, 10, 12 days. It was basically like, hey, we're having a party tonight. Come over. We got to clear these fermenters out and just force carbonate them, drink them, and so we could brew the next day. And we were buying full bags of grain, doing all malt batches, and just going nuts down at school. So everyone loved the beer, but then there'd be the times where something would come out, and I'll remember this to forever too. Like a friend of mine who I went to college with came in a piece. He's like, man, he's like, I still remember that butterscotch beer you made that one time. It was so good. And I was like, oh, I was like cringing, you know, I'm just like, yeah, the beer I dumped out, you know. Yeah. And then,
I've learned that those are two terms that brewers hate, like apple flavors and butterscotch.
Yeah, acetaldehyde diacetyl. Yeah, it's like, no.
And soy sauce.
Oh, and soy sauce. Yeah. Okay,
So we are like well over our usual time shit. For the show here, so we should probably start wrapping this up.
So anyway, Take Back the Streets.
Take Back the Streets, yeah.
Are very lucky. Very happy to win a medal for this year, and very surprised. Like I said, we had to really close to the deadline for changing any kind of beers. One of the beers that we were planning on entering, I didn't think was up to snuff. I thought that if I was at the table, that I would toss it. So it was just like, well, we've got this new beer we've made. It's like, what is it really? And It's not a double IPA. I mean, it's got that hop character, but it's not exploding with fruity hops, and it's got a definite malt character to it. So it kind of fit. I was like, well, really, we've done an international pale ale, and there's double pale ales, and I'm trying to find something. I'm like, well, could this be an English barley wine? I'm like, no, that's not going to work. And you're kind of thinking of what it really is. So it kind of, to me, I mean, it's a double pale ale. It's got that malt character of a pale ale, and it's basically double the strength and double the hops, but it's not a double IPA. IPA would be thinner in body and like American double IPA, especially, just exploding with a little bit more bitterness. I mean, it'd be a much more assertively bitter beer, where this is basically like an 8.5% version of our pale ale.
And it starts to creep a little to the like almost red ale kind of realm a little bit, like the color, and I feel like the sweetness of it as well. So
and you can as it warms up too, we're tasting this kind of a little bit at, you know, it's definitely warmed up to 40, 42 degrees now. Mm-hmm. When it's coming out of the tap and it's real cold, you're like, oh, I can't believe this is 8.5%. As it warms up a little bit, you can feel the warming.
My buddy, you know, it's just kind of random, but not really. Like, so, you know, because I tend to
random. Random, I've had many a growler. So,
you know, we only had like, it was only like 8 growlers on the table. No, my buddy, he went to Lone Wolf tonight, right? And he's like, yo, there's a 2.5 hour wait on a Tuesday at Lone Wolf, right? And, you know, when you go to Lone Wolf, it's a primarily, they've only got like one brewery essentially on tap, right?
Yeah.
Have you ever thought about like a spinoff concept of any kind? Because like part of my head, like if I started a bar, it would be like all Chicago all the time. Okay. And you know what I mean? So have you ever thought about like a spinoff concept at all for your beers?
Yeah, I mean, it's all kinds of different thoughts have come out. But the owner is, it's Peace is such a unique place, and there's been thoughts of doing it somewhere else or doing something else, and they've kind of been tossed around, even in a different city or something like that. But and obviously, I mean, I'm always thinking towards the future, doing something, making this accessible to other people as well. But it would have to be done done right and done well and executed properly, and that's where you you're like, well, we've got this kind of tight knit, you know, everything's clicking, we're firing on all cylinders. So yeah, there's definitely that possibility. There's definitely something like that is definitely possible.
Always talks of it.
So. Exactly. Yeah, it's been talked about and tossed around
a few beers deep. You're like, we should just start selling this stuff in the stores.
Exactly. Yeah. So and I'd love to see that happen. It's just it would have to be done well and done right, because the last thing you want to do is tarnish your name.
Right.
And or one of the real concerns is to start providing it to people and then not be able to provide it, because we're really limited. I mean, we'd have to do a separate location if we were going to do any kind of production. If we started doing even small scale out of the location we have right now, there's no space for keg storage, empty or full, and then the ability to clean it and do everything the right way, kind of thing. So,
right. Yeah, I thought with the Bro Bagel expansion, we're gonna see more beer to go or something like that.
Yeah, it was, you know, that, and again, that was Bill's. That's where he comes from. You know, that the Jacobs Brothers Bagel were all over Chicago, and that's where he and his brothers kind of cut their teeth in Chicago in the business. So yeah, I think he wanted to go back to that and keep peace. What we were doing, you know, like make sure we're making good beer and good pizza, and my job is to make the good beer. So I'm doing what I can.
Nice. So you mentioned the Moose Knuckle coming out probably in the next couple of months. Anything else planned here in the future that people should be on the lookout for?
Well, we've got all our coming up. The Honey Butter Fried Chicken and the Girl and the Goat and some of our and the Doug's Atomic Pizza is now on the menu all the time. So that's coming up. So there hopefully will be another collaboration beer in there, sneak one in there over the next couple months.
Nice.
Barley Wine's coming out. We got New Year's Eve Party, which is unfortunately sold out.
Yeah, right, that's unlimited pizza, unlimited beer.
Yeah, that looks like a good time.
Yeah.
What I love about Peace is live band karaoke. What's your go-to song on live band karaoke?
I own Night Moves.
Seeger!
Right on.
Damn. Well, that's awesome. Like anyone in Chicago, hopefully you've made it to Peace and had some of these beers. And I'm sure everyone has a favorite Peace beer. Like it seems like you talk to someone, they're like, I love Golden Arm, I love Single, I love Camel Toe. It's like everyone just has a beer that they like look forward to.
Well, and I'd like thank you to everyone who's drank my beers over the years. I really appreciate it, and I really appreciate you guys and inviting me over here. And regardless of medals or anything like that, I'm just trying to do the best I can, yeah. And I appreciate that people appreciate that. So I really am. I'm happy that people enjoy the beers, and that's really kind of the best part of the day, or the best part of anyone's, or my day at least, is like when someone doesn't know you, someone doesn't know what you're doing, and you're kind of maybe having a rough one, or the pump broke down, or something like that. Yeah. But someone comes in and has a beer, and just like, wow, this is good. Like that kind of immediacy of seeing someone enjoy something that you've done is kind of makes it all worthwhile. So thank you to anyone who's ever drank a beer and enjoyed it. I really appreciate it. I really, really do.
That's awesome.
That's cool, man. Yeah, I think it's one of the quintessential stops if you're in town.
Yeah.
If you're in this city and you got five places to go.
For beer and pizza.
Yeah. You go to Peace.
Definitely good.
Yeah. So.
Well, Nick, before we get out of here, where can people find you, get in touch, you know, find out about your New Year's plans?
Right on, man. I'm on Twitter at Nicosio.
And I'm on Twitter at BRAD. Chicago Beer Pass is on Twitter at Chicago Beer Pass. Website chicagobeerpass.com. All the episodes get posted there. Links to iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, SoundCloud. Any way you need to listen or watch the show. Yeah, and we got a lot of beer to drink, so we better get out of here. And everyone have a happy new year. Thanks for listening this year.
Right on, man.
Any questions or anything like that, peacechicago.com. I'm not on Facebook or Twitter.
Bill is all about updating Twitter.
Yeah, Bill. Shout out to Bill, man. Yeah. He's clutching, like making sure everything, all the gaps were filled. Man.
Bill is the marketing guy. I think it's better that there's a single voice for the place because I might make some different comments depending on how many beers.
Yeah, man. When we were thinking about this interview coming up, I was thinking to myself, like, man, you know, this is kind of like interviewing like Ric Flair. right? Well, or like you know, or like
Ric Flair.
Have you ever been compared to
I would kill for Ric Flair's hair.
You know, like, we're talking longevity. I'm a big sports guy. You know, like analogies. You know, like Pete Rose, Bill Russell. You know, Karl Malone. You know what I mean? Like it's in that kind of realm, man. You know, like it's a very short list. So I'm very excited that you came, man. I really appreciate you being here, man.
All right.
And one more thing, man. Brad Chmielewski, man, my co-host, his birthday's tomorrow. So yeah, happy birthday to fucking this guy.
Thank you.
Right on, man. And that's the end of our show, man. That's the end of our year.
End of the year. Thanks for listening and watching. We'll be back next year.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Cheers.